This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
PeopleSpeakRadio.net. This is your host for the next hour, David Swanson, and we are very privileged to have with us award-winning musician, an artist who, as it says on the PeopleSpeakRadio.net, defies classification, Detroit's revolutionary soul man, Nadir. His music is soul, it's funk, it's hip-hop, I don't know what you call it, but it's music you got to hear. You were just listening to some of it, and we'll be playing it through the evening. Nadir has won awards from his solo debut, Distorted Soul, which was crowned the Best Funk Album of the Year by SoulPatrol.com. His album Slave, which included 14 different remixes of the award-winning composition Slave and other tracks. And his new album is Working for the Man, and it is a revolutionary album, and we'll be talking about that and about his job as a reporter for MTV and about his activism and everything else that you all want to talk about as we lead into this debate in a much more exciting way than you will find on PBS or Fox News. Nadir, welcome to the program.
How are you, David?
I'm great. It's good to talk to you. I've seen you around working for peace and justice and playing music for it for years now, and it seems like you're just warming up, and you've got a new album, and I've been listening to it, and it's terrific. Tell us about the new album.
Yeah, thanks a lot. The new album is called Working for the Man, and it is a political dance record. So we've got some funk, some hip-hop, some house music, and really the focus is I've been writing a lot of political songs over the last couple of years as I've been involved in a lot of activism, both in Detroit and nationwide, and so just happens to be what was on my mind at the time, and so we pulled it together as a political record, and it's getting some really good reviews so far. A couple of weeks it's been out, and hope everybody enjoys it, and you can learn more about it, and you can hear songs from it at distortedsoul.com, which is my website.
Yeah, you've got a bunch of websites now, but that's the main one, I guess, distortedsoul.com.
Right. Well, I've been doing I've been at the David Swanson School of website, hosting and okay. Having 50 different sites. I'm working to really compress and get it down to just the distortedsoul.com site, but we've got sites for a couple of the other businesses that I work with and then the MTV profile and MySpace and Facebook, and we're out at all those different places.
Now, I saw a clip on one of your websites that mm-hmm. has you and your band playing a song called Guantanamo in the studio for the local Fox News station in Detroit. And
yes, sir.
I'm not sure if they caught what you were saying in those lyrics. Can you explain to me how you snuck that on Fox News and what you were saying there?
Well, it was the Fox 2 morning show, so maybe they weren't quite awake yet, but but yeah, that we were on a couple of weeks ago for the Fox 2 morning show when we did a Detroit Rocks the Vote event that they had at the Fillmore Theater here in Detroit, and so they asked us if we'd come on and do a couple of songs, and we were told that we would and actually they cut us down to only one, and so having to make a choice and knowing what Guantanamo is about, I decided that we would do Guantanamo, which is really a song that it's anti-war. It's also just kind of the notion of the song is that if I see something wrong with my country, that I've got to get up and do something about it,
Yeah, if you see something, say something, like it says in the subway trains.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
But that's not what they mean.
Right, right. So that's really the chorus of the song is, or the pre-chorus is, why can't I say that it's wrong? Why can't I stand up and do the right thing? If I could just find a song that I could sing if I have to go all the way to Guantanamo.
And you sing in there in one of the verses about going to Iraq, and seem pretty clear to him. Clearly to imply that that's wrong.
Right.
One of the few voices to have been able to say that on a Fox television station.
Yeah, well, they did cut the song off, but not until after that verse got out, so that was that was cool. And but yeah, so it was good to be able to do that, and hopefully they'll invite us back, but we'll see.
Well, that's one of the best songs that the ones I've been listening to, anyway. It's a great one.
Thanks.
People should go and listen at distortedsoul.com. Let me tell people how they can get in on this conversation this evening. You can go to a chat room at thepeoplespeakradio.net and post your questions, and someone will send them to me, and I will ask Nadir, or even better, ask your question exactly the way you want to ask it by calling us toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada at 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494, or anywhere else in the world, 877-489-6350. Now, Nadir, among the hats you wear in recent months has been a reporter for MTV. How did you get that job, and what have you been reporting on?
Well, a friend of mine told me about MTV, their Choose or Lose project this election cycle. They do, Choose or Lose is MTV's award-winning program that they've been doing for several elections now. And this year they decided to create a street team, and the street team put a citizen journalist in each state and in the District of Columbia. So there are 51 of us. And so my friend told me about it, said, hey, this would be perfect for you. I've been doing some freelance journalism for the past few years now. And so I submitted an audition tape and did a couple of interviews and got the gig. So it's been very cool. And really the issue has been that we've been focusing on election issues, specifically centered around young people here in the state of Michigan. And so we've covered, I covered the American Axle strike when it was going on. We've talked about health care, which is a very important issue. And the economy has been really the primary focus here in Michigan, as it is everywhere else. And so we've done a lot of stories on that, done a couple of blogs about our political situation here with the former mayor. And so, yeah, there's been no shortage of stories to cover in Michigan. It's a really interesting state, with two international border crossings. We've got the largest Middle Eastern population, or largest population of Arabs and Muslims outside the Middle East. So, you know, no shortage of information and things to cover.
Now, I think you've been from Detroit as long as I've known you, but you're not originally, right?
No, I grew up in Tennessee, a little small town called Elizabethton, Tennessee, up in the mountains, and moved to Nashville and went to college there, and then I guess almost 10 years ago moved to Detroit.
Huh. Is there some country in your music?
You know, there's a little bit there. I think that you know, really growing up, learning to become a songwriter in Nashville, I really adapted the Nashville songwriting style. So the college that I went to is Middle Tennessee State University, and got my degree in recording industry management. And so as part of our music business program there, we often had music publishers and songwriters and artists that would come down and speak to our classes. And so we learned about the crafting of good songs, and country music is one of the few popular musics that still really focuses on lyrics and really focuses on marrying the lyrics to melody and things like that. And so I learned that those country songwriting tricks and, you know, things about how do you create a hit song and those types of things, and I applied them to the funk and the rock that I've been writing. And so yeah, I guess there is a little bit of country in there, but, you know, and then every once in a while my country accent will come out, but, you know.
Uh-huh. But you're not being
invited
to...
Yeah, so there's a little there.
You're not invited to all the Republican rallies yet.
actually, I was getting those emails for a minute, but yeah. You know, John McCain has left Michigan, so no, I'm not getting those emails anymore. So
I went to a Sarah Palin rally here in Virginia on Monday, and it was country music up and down. And
really,
and you know, when I go to a Willie Nelson show, you know, he's singing he's singing the kind of lyrics you're singing. The whole crowd's missing it, you know. Lily White Cowboy crowd is missing the lyrics.
Right, and I, you know, the John McCain rally that I did get to attend here, he was playing John Philip Sousa, so you know, that was a little different.
Bombs and marches,
right?
But you did go to the Republican National Convention in your. Your MTV reporter job, correct?
Yes. That was a very interesting experience. It was really great to go. You know, one of my goals had been I really wanted to go to Denver specifically, and when it turned out that that wasn't going to happen, you know, I was cool with it. But then they called back and said, hey, you know, we want you to go to the Republican convention. So I was like, oh, great. You know, that'll be a great opportunity too. What I was really hoping, David, was to get to actually be in the same room and meet George Bush. I didn't expect to meet him, but I wanted to actually be there and to hear his speech, because, as you know, I've been to the Capitol, to D.C., to play Guantanamo for him a couple of times, and he always skipped out. You know, the one time I think the day that you and I met was we went there for a protest, and he skipped out and went to Crawford, Texas. So I didn't really get a chance to be in the room, and then, don't you know, he skipped out on me this time as well and didn't show up, so.
I'm not sure they wanted him. They
No, it really seemed like they didn't. You know, I think that when they made the decision to have the Republican National Convention on Labor Day, there was some discussion about that because, you know, those people at the Excel Center were supposed to be off that day. And there were a lot of people that were not supposed to be working. And so, I think Stephen Colbert was probably the only correspondent that said anything about the fact that, you know, food was very hard to come by that day in the Excel Center and things like that. So I kind of wondered and, did write a blog about that, was wondering whether, the hurricane kind of gave them an excuse to not have Bush come in, because, you know, what were they going to say? I mean, how are they going to positively spin? What could he, and then, you know, eventually he did speak for a very short time, but, you know, McCain even now is doing his best to distance himself from George Bush and from the things that George Bush has done over the last 8 years. So no, I don't think that they wanted Bush to be there. And it seems that they did whatever they could to keep him from coming and ultimately, got their way.
Yeah. Probably a smart move given his ratings in the polls.
Right.
We're getting some questions on this topic in the chat room, so let me throw one at you, and let me remind everybody you can go and ask your questions at thepeoplespeakradio.net, or call in toll free 888-228-4494. 888-228-4494. Here's Carl in Oklahoma asks, do you feel that MTV has been hesitant to run commentary critical of Bush and the war in Iraq?
Do I think that MTV has been hesitant? I don't think that MTV has been any more hesitant than any of the other mainstream media has. You know, really the only...
Diplomatic response.
Well, really, I think that until Keith Olbermann came out and asked for Bush's resignation, have we really heard very much? You know, has Wolf Blitzer really talked about how bad the war has been going? And no, I mean MTV, you know, focuses on entertainment. That's really the primary focus there. Period. You know, the choose or lose, we're covering the election and we're doing our best to cover, and be as unbiased as we possibly can. I mean, everybody has their biases, but we don't include our opinions in our reporting. So, you know, I can't really speak for MTV, but I would say just from my observations, I don't think that MTV has been any less biased or any more biased than anybody else in the mainstream media, except maybe Fox News, who is definitely, you know, pro-conservative, and MSNBC is definitely very pro-liberal and very pro-democratic. Everybody else seems to be kind of riding a fence when there doesn't, you know, to me, the lines are drawn pretty clearly. But part of that is that notion that journalists are supposed to be objective. But, you know, sometimes I wonder, you know, with objectivity, shouldn't objectivity tell you, well, this is the truth and this is not the truth, versus objectivity being, you know, I don't need to form an opinion.
You would think, or if three quarters of the country's against the war, you would think three quarters of the guests would be against the war instead of 3% or whatever it is on the networks. Let's we got people calling in too, Nadir. I think okay. people are interested in this. So let's see if Mike from California has got a question. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the People Speak Radio.
Thank you very much. Hello, Nadir.
How you doing,
I'm
Mike?
I'm in the virtual radio auditorium, and I don't remember a guest actually coming into the radio room since Tommy Chong visited us about a year ago. So thank you for joining us there in the room. And my question for you is, what do you feel should be done regarding President Bush and Dick Cheney if they escape impeachment, which it looks likely, and leave office unscathed?
Right. Well, I am, it's no secret how I feel that George Bush and Dick Cheney should be treated. I think that they should be impeached before they leave office. If they do escape impeachment, which it does look like they are going to, I believe that they should be indicted. And all prosecution should be pursued. And I think that if a fair and just prosecution is pursued, they will be found guilty, and I think they should be put in jail. That is my opinion, has been my opinion for years.
Nadir, let me add a little bit that I'm guessing you won't disagree with, but you know, they can still be impeached after they're out of office. It's been
right
done
for 5 years.
What do you mean for 5 years?
Aren't they able to be impeached like 5 years after they're out of office, or is there a statute of limitations on that?
I've never heard anything about that one way or another. That's news.
You haven't heard about like a time limit?
No, and
okay.
There aren't any statutes involved. I mean, there's just the U.S. Constitution, which simply
right.
does not limit when you can impeach someone, and there's precedent.
Mm-hmm.
There was a senator who was impeached after he had resigned, and but it's a little bit of a mixed precedent because the Senate declined to convict, but that
right.
doesn't mean the impeachment wasn't constitutional.
And
if you impeach someone after they're out of office, you can still bar them from ever again holding a U.S. public office of any sort, you know, running for Congress or whatever. You can deny them their pensions, you know, as if they need it. And you can, more importantly, set a precedent for future presidents that there's some kind of a penalty for breaking
right.
the laws. And I would add on top of that, and I'm guessing again that you don't disagree, even if they are impeached, I still want them prosecuted and put behind bars.
Right. I completely agree. And I mean, that's, you know, it's, if you're, and as you said, I mean, what has happened now is we've set a precedent. And there's actually the second track on my record is, I did an interview with Dennis Kucinich. My very first interview, as an MTV Street Team reporter was with Dennis Kucinich because during Michigan's abbreviated primary here, he was the only candidate that came to campaign in Michigan at that particular time during the primary season.
To, right?
Right. I mean, nobody wanted any of the other candidates to campaign here, and Kucinich was like, "Well, I'm on the ballot. You know, I'm going to show up." So I did get to meet Dennis Kucinich and interviewed him. And one of the questions that I asked him was about the impeachment resolutions that he had introduced at that time against Dick Cheney. And one of the points that he made, which is included in one of the tracks on the album, is that by saying that impeachment is off the table, Congress has essentially given a license to future generations and future presidents to abuse power in exactly the same way that Cheney and Bush have. And so certainly something should be done. And I think that for the Democrats, and I've been very critical of the Democrats in my personal blog over the past couple of years as well, I just believe that the Democrats should be doing something about this, and they haven't. And they've allowed, you know, all of the things that they were elected, that they were given the power for in 2006, when they regained the majority in Congress, they have not done. And so I've been very critical of them, and I think that, you know, as many crimes as Bush and Cheney have committed, I think that the Democratic Congress is just as culpable because they either voted along with them or failed to stop Bush and Cheney. So I really believe that I'm livid about that and have been for a long time.
I recommend that everyone go and listen to that song that you made about impeaching the president using Kucinich's comments, because it's excellent. And I emailed it to Kucinich today. I haven't heard back, but I'm guessing
okay.
He will love it if he hasn't already heard it. But it's excellent. So distortedsoul.com is the website. But Nadir, this is a question that every guest on this program gets sooner or later, and you just walked right into it. Janice in Arizona says, who is Nadir voting for and why?
Who is Nadir voting for and why? Nadir will make the decision on who he is going to vote for probably when I walk into the booth. And the reason is that my political leanings are definitely more in line with Cynthia McKinney and with the Green Party. And I absolutely, you know, right along party platform lines, really believe in what the Green Party is doing. And the issues that I've had with the Green Party have bordered around or have centered around how organized they are as a political party or how, you know, I guess disorganized they can be as a political party. So I really believe that the two-party system is a big part of the problem in the United States. And so, but at the same time, recognizing that there may not be much opportunity for the Green Party even to achieve the 5% of the vote that is their goal this time around, I may end up voting for Barack Obama, though I don't feel good about it. And I feel a little bit better about voting for Barack Obama than I felt about voting for John Kerry, which I did in 2004. But I'm very upset that Barack Obama signed the FISA bill. I do not like Barack Obama's stance, his military stance primarily. The saber rattling with Pakistan and simply wanting to, they want to end the war in Iraq, but they simply want to redeploy troops to Afghanistan. I have serious problems with that. There are just issues that I have and he's pretty much he's in line with the Democratic Party platform. So, you know, I can't fault him for that. And where I disagree with him is where I disagree with most Democrats. So, you know, that's the bottom line. So I will make my decision probably at this point. We're 2 weeks away and I'm, you know, my heart is leaning Cynthia McKinney. My head is saying, you may have to vote for Barack. I'll make the decision, when I get to actually sign the paper ballots that we have in my district. So.
Oh, that helps, although that's not the whole state of Michigan, of course. And And if you just watch the polls in the morning and it looks like Obama's got a safe margin of victory in Michigan and you go say, well, I'm going to vote for Cynthia McKinney now, and then it turns out they don't know how to count the votes again, as we've seen.
Right. And that is a concern here. They do say that Barack Obama has a safe margin in Michigan, and I am very concerned, and I've talked to friends of mine who are activist friends here, and some white friends of mine here in Michigan are very concerned about the racist vote in Michigan. And no matter what the polls say, I've talked to a few people, even Democratic Party officials here, who believe that the race is a lot closer than is being stated in the polls.
Because of the so-called Bradley effect that white people...
The so-called Bradley effect that people will say they're going to vote for one person, but they will actually vote for another person. But then I've had other friends who were just in northern Michigan and saw T-shirts that said Barack Obama is my homeboy and had like a caricature of him, and another picture of Barack Obama as Buckwheat from the Little Rascals and things like that. So in parts of Michigan where there aren't many black people, there aren't many minorities at all. And when we look at Michigan historically, the one thing that I always come back to when I'm talking about this issue with people is that we, Michigan banned affirmative action a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And, that was another vote that was polling that it would look like that proposal was going to be voted down. And then all of a sudden that proposal ended up passing to ban affirmative action. And so, you know, back when the Ku Klux Klan was at its height, Michigan had the largest membership in the Ku Klux Klan outside the South. So I certainly know that legacy is here, and that is why I'm on the fence about whether I'm going to vote for Cynthia McKinney or whether I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. It has, you know, less to do with the politics than with the pragmatic nature. You know, I know I'm definitely not going to vote for John McCain, and I definitely don't want a John McCain presidency. But at the same time, you know, do you vote your conscience or do you vote what's practical? So that's where I am now.
Well, I read some good articles with, you know, the 18 reasons why the Bradley effect is overrated, and you'd think people would just say, well, I'm voting for McCain, but not say it's because he's the white guy. Give them other reasons why they're voting for McCain and so on.
Right.
I'm not convinced the Bradley effect is there and big and real, but I don't know Michigan. We have a caller on the line from Michigan. Let's see what she has to say. Basima from Michigan, do you have a question for Nadir?
Yeah, hi, Nadir. How are you? First of all, welcome. It's wonderful having one of our hometown boys out there. I hope one day to meet you. I'm also an activist in the area, have been for many years. And, you know, I think one of the problems here is I wholeheartedly agree with you that for historically what we have been voting for here in the United States is for the lesser of two evils. I think it's time we voted for someone that has the capacity of rising above evil and making decisions based on the best interest of our country and the best interest of the people within our country. Certainly Iraq is not in the best interest of our country. Neither now is Afghanistan. Perhaps at one time it was. I'm still not thoroughly convinced of that. And I just think it's an unfortunate situation when the vote has to be divvied up between evil and conscience. I think conscience has to rule out and win out at every point. So I thank you. I admire you, and I admire your courage and your stance and your music. And say it. Just go out there and say it. This is what we need. We need to hear it.
Thanks, Basima.
Right. Thank you very much. Yeah, and you know, I agree that we should be able to just do what's right. You know, David, why won't Congress impeach Bush and Cheney because it's the right thing to do? You know,
yeah.
and you and I have had that conversation several times. I mean, they won't do it because it's the right thing to do. They argue about whether it's even the politically expedient thing to do, and I disagree that it even is politically expedient to not impeach. And you know, so I think that at some point, if we are going to break out of the two-party system, there has to be a movement to do that, and there has to be some movement within the third parties to go the distance, and there has to be some commitment. And I think that the problem that I have is just looking at it from a pragmatic standpoint, is that really the best way to build political parties is from the ground up, is really to start at the local level and to be able to get your party members on school boards and city councils and, you know, the dog catcher and those types of people. And you build your party city by city, county by county, state by state. And then you can really make a presence in the national arena. And that's what the Republican Party did when Jimmy Carter was elected in 1976. And then after that, between then and the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980, the moral majority said, we're going to take back this country for the Republican Party, and we're going to do it by organizing neighborhood to neighborhood, church to church, and that's how they did it. And that, to me, is the way that a political party like the Green Party or Ralph Nader's Independent Party or the Libertarians or the Constitution Party, anybody, that's the way they should do it. Probably the best opportunity to do that was when Matt Gonzalez, who is now running for vice president with Ralph Nader, was very close to defeating Gavin Newsom in San Francisco. I mean, having a Green Party mayor in a major American city would definitely have been a coup for the Green Party. And on a local level, that really, I believe, would have excited the base in a way that even getting 5% of the vote in the presidential election isn't necessarily going to do. So again, that's, I come back to, you know, I can vote my heart, or I can vote, you know, this is the way that I think it's going to practically pan out, and this is the way that strategically it's going to pan out. But eventually, somebody's got to take that step and make that move, or otherwise, you know, we're just going to be stuck.
And we are going to have to take a quick break, but I applaud you, Nadir, because I know that, torn as you are how to vote, you're well aware and acting on the fact that most of what we do as citizen activists happens between elections and has little to do with how we vote. And you're there in between elections pushing for what we need to be pushing for. We are speaking with Nadir. He sounds like a great speaker, but you should hear him play guitar and sing. And we are going to hear a little bit of that as we go to break. And we will be back to talk about this evening's upcoming debate between the two big parties, and a debate that some of the other candidates are going to be taking part in soon as well. This is David Swanson, your host at the People Speak Radio. When we come back, join us toll-free, 888-228-4494, or in the chat room at thepeoplespeakradio.net. Back in a few. Is that what you wanted?
People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's the People Speak every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network. This land was made for you and
me. Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to EarthShare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of
And welcome back to the People Speak Radio. This is David Swanson, and our guest is Nadir, and you heard a little bit of his music singing there, Is That What You Wanted?, which I would love to see him sing to our president and vice president before they leave office, preferably from 5 feet away. And we will see if we can figure out a way to arrange that.
Absolutely.
It would be worth any effort. DistortedSoul.com is the place to go for Nadir's music, and his new album is Working for the Man, and I highly recommend it. I got some questions, but let's go to the questions that are coming in the chat room. Paul in Canada asks, I notice you said you are a reporter for MTV. Do you think that today's generation of young people are aware that Bush has messed up this country and that the war in Iraq was a mistake, or do you think they are complacent and unaware?
From every indication that I see talking to young people, they are completely aware of what is going on in this country, that Bush has messed it up, that our politicians who, I mean, frankly, what? Congress had, what was it, a 9% approval rating, even lower than Bush's approval rating, something like that, a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I think that young people are absolutely aware. Now, being young people, of course, they're worried about, you know, meeting girls or boys or, you know, having fun and being young people as kids should be. But I think that In speaking with them and interviewing young people throughout this past year, they're really concerned about, you know, am I going to have a job when I'm out of college? Am I going to be able to pay my school loans? You know, my nephew, who is 18, just went into the Marines yesterday, you know, because he can't afford to go to college, and, you know, it's looking at his options, and he says, you know, okay, I may have to go to Iraq and I may have to carry a gun, but they'll pay for me to go to school. You know, and it's
sometimes they will, usually
sometimes they will. I told him, you know, no, you don't always, and actually most GIs don't qualify for the GI Bill. But that's, you know, that's what he was told. That's how he was told that he would get in. And looking at job prospects, looking at the opportunities that he has, he made a decision, you know, to go to some place where they were offering him a nice signing bonus and a decent salary and benefits, and he's not going to have to pay, you know, he's not going to have to pay light bill or a water bill, you know. So, I mean, yes, there's a possibility that he may have to go to Iraq, and he's aware of that. But I think that, you know, with young people, they know exactly what's going on, and even though there are a lot of distractions out there, I think that they do have more on the ball than they're given credit for. What is true, I think, of young people as well as adults or older adults, is that there seems to be just a lack of ideas about what to do about it. And I think that everything that we're told is that, you know, there's only so much that you can do. I mean, even when your Congress tells you, well, these guys, you know, we think these, you know, somebody like John Conyers from Michigan, who says, yes, you know, writes a book and says, these guys broke the law, but I'm not going to pursue putting them in jail because it wouldn't do any good. You know, young people look at that and they wonder, you know, we all have to wonder, is there a reason for us to have hope? You know, and you've got a president a presidential candidate that's coming out talking about, yes, we need to have hope and all of that. But, you know, at the same time, what hope are we being offered? You know, and I think that's what young people see. And so just like everybody else, they're preoccupied with their iPhones and with their, you know, with their Wii's and those types of things. But at the same time, I think they're really paying attention, especially to this election, because they know what's at stake. I mean, they're aware that they're the ones that are going to end up paying for this bailout. They're aware that they're the ones that are going to have to deal with the environment going south. So they know these things, and that's why you're seeing more engagement with young people so far in this election. We'll see if it actually translates to on election day. And then we'll also see what I'm most curious about, as you said earlier, David, what's going to happen in between elections. That's where the real groundwork has to be done. And so, you know, all of these young adults who are out volunteering for Obama now, you know, what are they going to do in January and February and December? You know, are they going to sit around and they're going to wait for Obama to change the world for them if he gets elected? You know, or are they going to get out and realize that if he gets elected, they're the ones that got him elected, and that they are the ones that then should be doing something about changing their own communities and changing the nation that we live in.
And forcing him to do what we need him to do, because he's not going to do it on his own.
Exactly.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, as little as young people and the rest of us are doing, they're doing a hell of a lot more than you'll see on American corporate television, and thousands of them are not just knocking on doors, but marching and risking arrest and mm-hmm. writing letters and filing suits and protesting and educating their neighbors, and you won't see it on our televisions because it would encourage other people to do the same, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. And actually, if you go to distortedsoul.com, there's a box on the left-hand side that has my Republican National Convention coverage. And, you know, I was actually more interested while I was there in what was going on outside the convention and what was going on around there. So, yeah, 894 people were arrested that week in Minneapolis-St. Paul. And that's something that was underreported in the media. A lot of reporters got arrested. Our street team reporter from Wisconsin, Charlie Behrens, got arrested on the fourth day of the convention, had to spend the night in jail. You know, and all he was doing was covering a protest. You know, I got tear gassed the first day, my first time getting tear gassed. And, you know, I mean, it was just really, there were a lot of people that were out and protesting and letting the Republicans, or doing their best to let the Republicans know how angry they are over where things have gone for the last 8 years. And the police and the National Guard would simply line up at the end of each protest in full riot gear, and they would just sweep the blocks and move people off of the blocks using tear gas, concussion grenades, rubber bullets, batons, whatever was necessary. They would either, people would either leave the vicinity or they would go to jail. And all of this was done before the delegates got out of the convention each night. So the delegates that I talked to afterward never saw a protester, never saw police officers, you know, beating people as happened to some people, never saw the tear gas, those types of things. So it is, you know, definitely there are a lot of people that are doing things about it. There are a lot of people that are working to make that change, but it isn't covered in the media. That is something that the media has definitely avoided. And that's one of the things that we really felt was a possibly a tactical error on John McCain's part that first day of the convention, was by not really having a convention activity. He left hundreds of reporters in Minneapolis-St. Paul with nothing to do but cover that first protest. And so that's why you saw people like Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! Being arrested, and though she probably would have been out there anyway. But, you know, a lot of reporters, and you saw a lot more coverage of the protests that first day than you ever see of protests at a convention. So yeah, people are out there working and doing their best to change the country. There just seems to be a lack of focus, or maybe it's just that lack of understanding that there are thousands of other people out there that feel exactly the same way that you do.
That's exactly right. We got 3 minutes in this program, Nadir, and we got questions.
Wow.
Let me try to get at least one more question in for you. We've got Sandra from Oklahoma, and here she puts it, the question to musicians. I am somewhat disappointed by today's musicians, who don't seem to have as widespread and strong a protest against the Iraq War as there was against the Vietnam War. What do you think? And what do you think in a minute or less?
Well, the difference between the Iraq War and the Vietnam War is that back during the Vietnam War, radio played all different types of music all the time. And so during the Vietnam War, an artist could walk into a radio station and get a record played themselves. Now you have to pay to get your music on the radio. So it isn't that there are not artists out there writing this music. And it isn't that there aren't artists out there that are marching with the protesters, that are performing at protests. It is that we do not have the media access that they had back in the 60s. That is a big difference because of the way that the corporate-owned media controls radio, controls television and MTV. You really don't get to see that in the mass media context. But if you go out on the Internet, those artists are there. Those artists are out there, and they're playing all different genres of music. I've seen country protest records to rock, to, you know, punk, to hip hop, all different genres of music. All over the world, there are people that are saying the same things that I'm saying. But we, as independent artists who don't have that corporate backing, do not get the exposure that somebody like a Puff Daddy or a Little John or the Jonas Brothers get. And so when those people have that corporate status, they don't necessarily step out and make those same statements that those of us who are not beholden to the corporate machine are going to make.
Nadir, we appreciate your time with us. We're going to have to leave it there, but people can go to distortedsoul.com. I encourage everybody to buy this artist's records, buy them as presents for your friends, buy as many as you can, and then go to thepeoplespeakradio.net and give us whatever money you have left, because we have to keep this program on the air so that we get these musicians and these artists and these activists and these experts out there to you. Next Monday, Jerry Spence will be on the program, this super lawyer known above all from the Karen Silkwood case. And my guest a week from tonight will be Dean Baker, a leading economist who has been a voice against the so-called bailouts. You don't want to miss that program. Nadir, thank you so very much for being on the People Speak Radio.
Thank you very much, David. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Our pleasure. And we will talk with you all next week.
Yeah.